And sometimes they make decisions out of fear or out of triggers of past experiences. And removing barriers helps us live to be our most authentic selves. And we do service people between the ages of 4 and 18 years old as well. So we have a child and youth worker that helps to help them work through the traumas of sexual violence that they have experienced.
So even after the Me Too movement, there still needs to be a lot more awareness made.
Absolutely. We're new. We've only been here for 2 years now and focused specifically on sexual violence. We had projects prior to the center being established, but now we are a sexual violence healing center. So that has really brought a more of a focus on becoming well known that we offer services for victims of sexual violence. Survivors of sexual violence, sorry.
I guess to add to that, too, we also like to put out there that we do help people who are secondary victims. So we call, I guess, secondary victims are people that were not directly violated. It may be the relatives of that person who experienced sexual violence. So it could be grandmas, aunties, brothers, sisters, mom, dad. So those people, sexual violence is kind of has a ripple effect. So the one drop is the person, the ripple, it rippled out to the rest of the family. So we do offer support for those people as well.
And the neat thing, Al, is that before the healing center was established, we used to refer our community members off territory. So now that we have our own center here, like, you know, that referral can be made to Sunajima and to really help them to pace and help their roadmap to their healing goals.
And I think I would like to add, too, with regards to services, it's really client-centered. It's a client-centered approach. So what that means is it's the counselor supporting the person in reaching those goals. So it's not driven by our counselors. It's driven by the client. What are you here for? What would you like to accomplish? What are things you want to work on? So I just would like the community to keep that in mind, because when accessing services, there could be a lot of fear attached to that. And we just want to help people feel comfortable in coming and sharing that part of their life with us, because it can be a very scary thing. And we've had, you know, maybe it's the first time they're saying it out loud, you know, and we want to make sure that, you know, they're respected and that disclosure is as supported as possible.
Right. Right. Well, I have a very good question for you, ladies. Being that, you know, these days we're shut up in the house more so than ever because of the pandemic, how does COVID-19 impact sexual violence?
So, especially on reserve, there are a lot of challenges, I think, that come with the COVID-19 shelter-in-place situation. Like, people have limited access or contact with people, their support network, like counselors that they regularly go to, families or friends. They, you know, we have multi-generational homes, and people may not have the space to have that confidential conversation or have a safe conversation with their counselor. Sometimes there's unsafe shelter-in-place circumstances with, like, potentially abusive family members or intimate partners or caregivers, which increases the chances of, you know, violence continuing in the home. Limited or no access to services such as telephone or internet access. So a lot of people are on, like, pay-as-you-go cell phone plans, and it's difficult and challenging for them to call for support with that in mind. Limited operation of transportation services available on reserve, such as taxis, expensive as well, right, when you're on a fixed income. COVID-19 has triggered a lot of fear and uncertainty in the community. People may be coping more using mind changers such as alcohol or drugs. Limited face-to-face access to medical professionals after an assault. So we know that a lot of our attention and focus right now is combating the COVID-19 spread. So a lot of our resources and medical staff have been focusing on that. Not to say that they're not accessible, because I know I've contacted my doctor myself, but that may face some challenges, whether or not they're open, what does this hours look like, type 5. Limited or not accessing medical help due to fear of getting COVID-19, so not being afraid to go to the emergency room to get help. Increased stress about financial situations for those who had to stop working due to COVID-19. That creates a lot of stress for, especially between partners. You know, how are they paying their mortgage? Are they, you know, able to pay for their car or their insurance? Having to rely on non-professional child caregivers throughout the COVID-19. Children not attending school, so children are having more access to the internet and could be on social media apps such as Snapchat, Twitter, TikTok, that may open them up or become more susceptible to online predators or grooming. Sexual exploitation for vulnerable people, such as those that couch surf, so having to shelter in place with an unsafe person that demands sexual favors in exchange for a place to stay, food to eat, or a ride somewhere. Yes, and having limited access to community resources such as food banks, which is, has improved from when we first made this, but it has really improved where they deliver now to the home. So I think that is something that is a really plus at coping through this COVID-19. As well as hot meal programs, Tim Hortons, library, use of the internet or the bathroom. So having very limited access of what was normal in this abnormal situation. Increased stress and intolerance of service providers, such as medical staff, police officers working on the front lines, can lead to desensitization. And changes to the shelter caps for emergency shelter programs. Increased demand for space in the shelter system causing gaps in service. I know here we have dropped to just having phone support, using the telephone as access to reach our